crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
It's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those swindling old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North Carolina. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office, and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
So Shazay is here. Hope you're all doing well. You're listening to www.shazizradio.com, Mad Science Show. So anyway, let's jump right in there today. There's a deal out there that's been up there for, let me just go ahead and jump on there. I posted a Wikipedia article in there, Heron's Fountain. Ron's Fountain is a hydraulic machine invented by the 1st century AD inventor, mathematician, and physicist Heron, also known as Heron of Alexander. It's a pretty interesting deal. Actually, tried to replicate this, but mine seems to leak air, so I got to figure out a way to make it not leak air so that it'll at least function the way it should. Anyway, I posted some video links inside there, and I posted a Wikipedia article if you want to read more about Huron's Fountain. Jump over there to shazizradio.com/superchat.html. That's where you get to talk to the Wake Radio side and the Shaziz Radio side at the same time. So, anyway, what is this fountain that I'm talking about here? It's basically, you got, well, I've seen them do it with two bottles, but the one that I saw first has three bottles. And you fill the top one up. There are two bottles. You fill the bottom ones up equally, about half the bottles. And as the top one is draining down, it forces air pressure in the first one, which in turn forces air pressure over into the second one, and the air pressure from the second one pushes down on the liquid and pushes it up back into the deal again. So at first glance, looks like perpetual motion, you know. Just the mere fact that using gravity to fall down, dropping the liquid down, and being able to force that back up above the initial water level where it came from, that's pretty impressive. And so one of the videos that I put in there was a man who said that he solved the problem of why after a certain period of time this thing would actually stop, because it would run out of fluid on the one of the bottles down there. And then, so he puts a line from the bottom to the bottom to allow the water to flow across to the other bottle, and they always maintain the same level. Of course, now in his video, it looks like it does just what he says, but then when you go down and read the comments and you hear all these people talking about how, because he used colored water, that he's probably got a hidden pump in there and all that kind of jazz. Well, first off, if that's what he's doing, it's ridiculous. I mean, it drives me insane when people gotta try to hoax something and try to get views just by telling everybody they found perpetual motion or whatever. I honestly believe that perpetual motion is possible, even though contrary to the laws of physics and the conservation of energy, they believe that it is not possible. That's why the U.S. Patent Office will never accept anything with perpetual motion in the title or description. So, when you look at this doggone thing, and you see that it can actually pump water up to above the water level that it first initially came out to, like I said, that is really impressive. Now, there's all kinds of water pumps out there. The hydraulic ram pump basically uses a water hammer effect to go through a couple gate swing check valves and cause back pressure to force water, and they've been able to pump water way up the hill using the just the motion from the stream alone, or the river, whichever. There's all kinds of different ways to pump water, and reason why I'm bringing this up is because water's a fascinating it's just fascinating, for Pete's sake. Can't even think of the words I'm trying to say. Anyway, first off, water's hydrogen and oxygen, so if you can separate them, you've got a massive amount of energy at your fingertips. It also, water is pretty heavy. It's anywhere from 6 to 8 gallons of, 6 to 8 pounds per gallon, depending on who you ask. And stinks, you can't get a straight answer. I mean, I need just to get some doggone water and put it on a scale and find out for myself. But regardless, even if it was only 6 pounds, that's 6 pounds of downforce pressure that is available. And so, using everything that you know from basic science and the laws of physics and different effects that like the Venturi effect, gravity and siphoning, all these different methods, if a person could get the water to continuously recycle itself and use the fall of that water down to actually get some work done and actually produce a little bit more energy, Also, I put a link in there, Lord Kelvin Generator. It's a Wikipedia article, but you get the hint. I'm not a fan of Wikipedia. Excuse me. But either way, the Lord Kelvin water dropper, invented by a Scottish scientist, William Thomas Lord Kelvin, in 1867, is a type of electrostatic generator. Kelvin referred to the device as his water dropper condenser. The apparatus is variously called the Kelvin hydroelectric generator, the Kelvin electrostatic generator, a Lord Kelvin thunderstorm. The device uses falling water to generate voltage differences by electrostatic induction occurring between interconnected, oppositely charged systems. Its only use has been in physics, education, demonstration, and principal electrostatics. Alright, now, that last portion there that I just read out there is kind of frustrating, because they said the only use is for basically science purposes, because they haven't figured out no way to use this electricity. You know, static electricity can be stored in capacitors. We already know that. So a capacitor could be used as a battery. And if you use that one specific deal of Lord Kelvin generator where it produces electrostatic, or even a Van de Graaff generator for that matter, there's tons of different electrostatic generators out there available. You know, there's designs of all kinds. And where I have a problem with society is the fact that when you look at something like Lord Kelvin generator, people don't think that it's worth doing anything. It takes more energy to do this and that, blah, blah. They're missing the whole point. That one anomaly, you know, you can get electrostatic charge out of some falling water through two opposite buckets like he did in the Lord Kelvin generator. So you know that you can actually generate an electrostatic charge with that falling water. You also know that you can produce hydroelectrics by running water through a turbine, which then in turn turns a generator head. And so using the weight of the water and the force of gravity, you can actually generate electricity. Hydroelectric dams have been doing it for decades now, if not longer. And so the one anomaly by itself, Lord Kelvin generator, maybe not going to cut the mustard. But now you added a little bit of hydroelectrics in there, and so now you got something else going on. And with the Huron's fountain, where it's actually able to pump the water up above its original water level, now you're not just talking about static electricity and hydroelectricity. All you're also talking about air pressure and being able to lift water above its own level just by the forces of gravity and air pressure in the sealed system, where it can actually, you know, recirculate itself. Even if that only occurred for a short period of time, it still doesn't change the fact that it has occurred, that you have actually brought water above its own level just with the power of the falling water alone. And so, if you had Lord Kelvin generator with hydroelectrics and then the Huron fountain, now you got three forces working together. Actually, more than that, but let's just count each one as one apiece. So now you got three forces working together. All right, and all of these, none of these really take any moving parts, with the exception of the hydroelectrics with the turbine. So from that point on, there's other methods that you can use to either raise the water pressure or build back pressure and stuff like that. So one of these anomalies by themselves not going to do the job as far as running your house, the energy hog that is your house, all right? But imagine if you took all these forces together and even thermoelectrics even thermal, basically like a heat siphon. You know, if you heat something up, it expands. The air in a sealed container will expand. It'll pressurize. And so, taking everything you know about all these different alternative energy devices and all these different gizmos out there that you've looked at and all the knowledge of all the different researchers out there, combining them into one unit, allowing this thing to catch some sunlight when it's sunny, allowing it to catch some wind when it's windy, allowing it to basically use all these things in conjunction like a Swiss watch, just finely tuned Swiss watch. There is no reason whatsoever why electricity should not be free, with exception of the obvious, the greed and the craziness of industry, and everybody just wants money. They just want to get some money. But I've noticed a really disturbing turn. Excuse me, I gotta get a drink of coffee here. I've noticed a really disturbing trend in the alternative energy community, and it doesn't even exclude myself, is that the frustration is getting so crazy that people are just up and walking away. They're fed up. You got jerks out there continuously cussing you out, trying to degrade you, tell you how stupid you are, and you gotta tolerate that. On top of the fact that you don't always have the resources necessary to do the job the way that it needs to be done. That gets doggone frustrating, man. Because when you understand a basic concept like even this Huron's water fountain right here, this thing, if you could actually make it to where it would do perpetual motion, I mean, where it would continue to recirculate itself, then that would give the mainstream science community a major black eye, and you would they'd have some explaining to do. Because, you know, the science community, they're supposed to be out there for you, right? They're supposed to be there to educate you and learn new things and all that kind of stuff. Well, if you look back through the history of science, science is a massive amount of theory, all right? Some theory tested tested again and peer-reviewed and so on and so forth. But somewhere along the line, they lost their heart, man. The science community, they just, read the book, and that's that. You know, you don't try to step outside these boundaries. See, I'm a rebel against the laws of physics because I don't believe the laws of physics are written in stone. After all, the laws of physics are nothing more than theories. You know, because you get the same result 9 times out of 10, that must be it's a law of physics. I mean, that's the way it is, and that's all there is to it. So without even trying to defy the laws of physics, just using what we know about basic science, we got enough information readily available to literally build the perfect generating machine. Now, those hydroelectric dams, once they're up and running, they produce power for cities for years. They still do. The solar-powered communities out there, the ones that got massive amounts of solar panels, they're still producing energy. Same thing with the wind energy, you know. People say, well, wind and solar aren't reliable because it's not always windy and it's not always light outside. Well, doggone it. You know, somewhere 24/7, there's something going on. And if you took all these things in conjunction with one another as opposed to using them individually, sure, I can make a hydroelectric dam. Yeah, that's great. Well, what if the water goes dry? Well, then I got a backup, the sun. Yeah, I can use that. Well, what if the sun goes down? Well, then I got a backup and I can use the wind power. So you got three systems, backup for a backup for a backup, and you got more energy than you'll ever use. What if the water goes dry and the sun goes down and it's not windy outside? Well, the core of the earth is hot. There's thermal vents all over now, so now we could generate steam power and doggone thermoelectrics from the earth itself. Well, what if the water stops running, the sun's out, and the wind stops blowing, and the earth gets cold? Well, brothers and sisters, then we're screwed. Flat out, plain and simple, we're screwed. If all the forces of nature cease to stop, then we're screwed. Alright, well, look, it ain't gonna happen. Until doomsday, it's not gonna happen. Nature has provided so much abundance of everything. Materials, food, mineral, water. The earth is three quarters covered in water, for Pete's sake. Water is probably one of the most powerful substances known to man. I mean, you can cut through rock with water. You can separate the water molecule and burn both of two pieces separately. You know, oxygen will burn and hydrogen will burn. Hydrogen is implosive. And oxygen is explosive, so you get the best of both parties right there. Well, so now you got something that you can actually separate to burn as fuel, and then you also have something that can cut through stone under the right pressures. It's a no-brainer. Jermaine Fishwick said, Chaziz, what is the difference between an AC and a DC capacitor? Are the capacitors built differently? Now, there's actually really not a lot of difference at all in there. I'd have to do a little bit more research to get down into the specifics of it. But it's all in the difference of how you're going to actually be able to charge this thing. I can't remember what the deal is. I'll get back with you on that, Jermaine. But even capacitors, that's a brilliant deal there, because a capacitor isn't nothing more than a couple plates, all right, and with a dielectric in the middle, piece of plastic or something, you know, or even oil for that matter. And even a car battery, a lead acid battery, you know, you got a chemical in between these batteries and you got two plates in there. Actually, there's more plates because they've divided them up into different cells to up the voltage, run them all in series or whatever. But the key point in all of this right here is that a battery or a capacitor have just as much energy potential dead as they do alive. If a capacitor is completely dead and a battery is completely dead, they have just as much energy potential as one that is fully charged. Now, how in the heck could that be, man? You're talking crazy, Shaziz. Think about this for a second. When you charge a battery, all you're doing is putting more energy on one plate than you are the other. So essentially, you're tipping nature off balance. And if those two terminals were close enough together that it could literally leap across that gap, then you wouldn't be able to charge a battery. They have to be pretty far apart so that you can actually keep that energy off balance, so you have a storage. Well, if you got this thing fully charged up and there is no connection through there, it will hold that charge for quite some time. But the moment you give those electrons a path to the other side, they're going to go. and they're going to keep on going until nature balances itself back out. All the forces of nature, doesn't matter which forces you want to talk about, nature will always find its own level with water, it'll find its own balance with air, it'll find, it has a middle ground, it's a right there where everything is just stopped, that's it. That's nature's balance. Anytime you throw nature off balance, then nature will slap it back into place. So that's how, from point A to point B, we get work done. When we charge that capacitor or that battery, then we open the switch, make the connection, and allow that electron, that energy to flow. While nature's balancing itself back out, we're getting work done. And so, knowing that, the same concept applies with water. If you fill a giant bucket on one side and you fill you got an empty smaller bucket on the other side, that energy from that larger bucket will transfer down to the smaller bucket until that smaller bucket is completely full, and then that energy won't stop there. It'll burst right over the top of the surface of that bucket and then finally level itself out until it finds its level, no matter where it's at. Water will always find its level. And that's how nature works. So, you know, we're not doing nothing fancy with a capacitor or a battery, either one. Capacitors are good for their charge and discharge rate, and batteries, you know, can do pretty much the same thing. The charge and discharge rate is going to be determined on how smooth the path is over there. You know, what kind of resistance. That's why you can use a capacitor as a battery with a resistor on there, or already having your load connected to the capacitor. The capacitor is like a balloon. It only has so much storage space capable of it. And when you overcharge a capacitor, one of two things is going to occur. Either the capacitor is going to start spreading out until the container can't hold it any longer and blow up, or it's going to literally arc from one of the terminals clear across to the other side of the terminal. So what you end up with is, thousands of volts jumping from one to the other. And capacitors are usually rated by their voltage by the number of plates involved inside the capacitor, just like a battery. You know, the more surface area you got, the more electrons you can cram on into that capacitor. Now, they've figured out ways using graphene technology, like Robert Murray Smith does, to fit more in a smaller container because of the way that they're designed. And to be able to allow the electron flow to happen easier, the charge and discharge rate to be better. So, we're kind of still in the baby stage of being able to use that energy the way that we want to use it. But the fact remains is what we've got access to right now, all the technology that we have available to us, we got every single piece of the puzzle, literally, to build the perfect generator. But yet we're still paying electric bills, astronomical electric bills in some communities. And the frustration in the alternative energy community comes from the fact that a lot of folks have been working really hard researching. Because just like Nikola Tesla thought that if you could actually get energy to be free for people, like, there wouldn't be no excuse for people to go to war over oil or resources. And there really isn't no excuse. You know? Why burn I get so frustrated at this whole climate change / global warming debacle. It's just ridiculous, man. It's the doomsday that never ends. You will never, ever, 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 ever in your lifetime or a trillion, 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 trillion other lifetimes ever run out of oil. Never. It's not possible. You can't use it up fast enough. It's not going to happen. And when you think you've used it all, somebody else finds more. All the same minerals that were involved in creating crude oil to begin with are still doing the same job that they've been doing for since the entirety of the Earth's history. However long you think that is. And so, everything that doesn't get used, when you don't use it, nature takes it back. Puts it back into its natural state. And so with that said, you ain't going to run out of nothing. You're definitely not going to run out of water. The earth is over 3/4 covered in water, and you ain't never going to run out of water. You know, things move around because of the way that, you know, the earth shifts and waters and floods and all that, but everything that we had to start with is what we got today. We still have the same amount. It's just like in the electron, the copper atom has 29 electrons according to science, and the last one is loosely coupled, so that's the one we shake loose to get the current flow of electricity that we got. That's what they say. Alright, so when you're done running your electric motor, you still have just as many copper atoms as you had before. You still have just as many electrons as you had before. All you did is move them from one point to the next. Your copper wire doesn't get thinner and thinner every time you try to run your electric motor. As a matter of fact, the only thing that could ever destroy electric motor is the insulation fails and causes a dead short. Instead of 1,000 turns, you're down to 1. It's a dead short, and so it gets hot. So, properly built, you could build an electric motor that would literally last for eternity, as long as it didn't corrode up, as long as you were maintaining it, it lasts forever. And so if you could get this kind of mentality out there in the mainstream science, if you could get the average Joe to stop choking down everything that the doggone mainstream science community is dishing out, if you could get the average Joe to literally stop attacking the alternative energy community and start supporting them, then you could actually get something accomplished in this world. But, like I said, I've noticed a disturbing trend. There's a lot of really good researchers out there who are basically throwing in the towel. They've been working at it for so long, and they keep getting a bunch of trouble from everybody, getting mouthed off at all the time, and they're fed up, you know? Like, people don't want to hear that, you know, after they've been trying to show people something. You know, and then you got the knuckleheads out there that are always continuously trying to scam somebody, you know? Making hoax videos of free energy devices. Guys like Keshi running around lying and stealing from people. You know? And sure, if it's a, oh, what the heck you call it, some kind of psychological operation where they're going around and basically destroying anybody who it gets even close to the truth of free energy, and basically trying to make them feel stupid and trying to discredit them by putting people out there who's going to actually fake stuff and get caught faking it and try to rip people off. And basically, if you talk about free energy, suddenly you are one of them con artist guys. But on the Mad Science Show, I have discussed over and over and over until I'm blue in the face about all the access to free energy that's all over this globe if it was to be used properly. Now, I've been talking a lot about hydraulics and water pressure, water and stuff like that here recently, because as far as energy goes, that's going to be one of the most easiest one to actually build a free energy device from is water. Because you know you can separate it and use it for a fuel. You know that you can use the weight of it to produce a downforce. You know that you can boil it into, you can heat it up and boil it into steam and use that steam pressure to turn turbines. I mean, it's just, it goes on and on of all the different things that you can actually do with water in order to be able to produce energy to, you know, get work done that, you know, gives you the luxury of the AC in your house or the heating or a hot shower or whatever. Even cook your food. So, of all my research of alternative energy devices, the ones that fascinate me the most are the ones that have to do with water. And Lord Kelvin device basically fallen water producing a static charge. You also have high voltage now. Now, if you took all these things in conjunction with one another, instead of trying to pick it apart one piece at a time, you know, I put up a video and show somebody some anomalies, and the first thing that they do is, well, you know, that ain't going to ruin your house, that ain't free energy, blah, blah. You know, and I just, if I was a violent man, I'd want to reach out there and just smack them. Because they just ain't got no doggone common sense. I never even tried to say that this was by itself free energy. But in reality, it is free energy. But to do what everybody wants to do with it, you gotta think past the actual anomaly itself. You know, there's all kinds of devices out there. Electric motors, electric engines. There's plasma technology. And I ain't talking about the hoodoo, voodoo, Keshi version, rip everybody off and lie and steal and claim to be the Messiah kind of plasma. I'm talking about like argon and helium and nitrogen and halogen and all the different noble gases being energized into the plasma state. It's really easy to produce high voltage. And it's really easy to produce a radio signal. And so knowing that by passing a wave through a container of argon, you can actually get that argon to energize itself into the plasma state, which essentially is heat and light combined, and probably a whole lot more than a lot of people realize or even want to think about. Then if you got heat and light, you can get work done with it. If you got pressure, you can get work done with it. You can, all of what we're talking about, all of what I've been talking about, and all these people on here have been talking about, isn't new science. That's all proven technology. It's just, everybody needs to step back and get a whole completely different perspective on what you're going to do with this energy. You know, if you blow a balloon up and you keep your finger on there and keep it pinched off so that air can't get out, as long as that air can't escape from that balloon, the balloon will stay expanded. The moment you release that pressure, that balloon will fly all over the place because it's blowing the air out the back. That balloon's trying to get back to its natural state, which isn't expanded. It's the way that it was designed. The normal size of a balloon before you ever put any air pressure in it. And so that's a simple concept that could be used. You can store air pressure. You can store electrical pressure. You can store water pressure. And if you use these forces that you know are going to happen, you know, when they're aerating fish tank, for aquaponics, they'll build a venturi, and essentially instead of having to have two pumps, you only have to have one pump, because one pump pumps the water and the other pump basically creates a vacuum. The venturi creates a vacuum and sucks air in from the atmosphere and mixes it with the water, and now your water is oxygenated and the fish have fresh air. That's a two-for-one kind of deal. Two-for-one. You got one that would have normally took a second pump to pump air, to pump a diaphragm or whatever, a propeller or whatever it took to create the air pressure. But now you're down to one pump. So you just solved You got a 2-for-1. This is what I've been trying to say forever and a day. If you got this anomaly, and you know that if I'm pumping water anyway, why not aerate it at the same time? I put a venturi on there. Now, as the water's falling down from my... Oh, somebody always does that, inevitably. Hello, Raymond. How's it going?
Hey, pretty good. How you doing, partner?
You got me right in the middle of jaw-jacking.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are we on there?
Yeah, we're live, brother.
Okay, partner.
Alright, now let me see if I can grab my thought again. Alright, so basically, you take the doggone falling water. As the water was falling down, you used the venturi to create a vacuum, which now pulled atmosphere in from outside the deal. And now you got a 2-for-1 deal. And that water's still falling. Ain't nothing stopping you from taking that falling water and now running it through a hydroelectric generator. So now you got a 3-for deal going on. Alright, and the water's still falling. So ain't nothing stopping you from taking that water and guiding it off into a couple separate containers or even one extra container and having that water then in turn fall through the air as opposed to inside of a container. When that water falls through the air, then it goes through two separate metal rings that now in turn are producing a static charge. So now you got a 4-for going on. All right, and as that water finally goes down into the next portion of the system, it now produces air pressure inside this system that is pushed over to the other tank, which in turn creates a downforce, which pushes that water up a hose back up into the deal and restarts the whole system again. Oh, great! Okay, hold on. I'm on it. Look. Alright, you're live.
Uh-oh.
I got you on one call, and I got Raymond on another call. So how about this? You hang up, I hang up on Raymond, you call Raymond and me at the same time. What do you think? Sound like a plan? Yeah? No? Yeah? Alright, let's try this. I think I lost them both. Alright, we'll work this out. Do 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 do. Aha! Now we got Thomas. Alright, you just gotta love Skype. Now, can you grab Raymond? Thomas Anderson added Raymond. You're listening to the Mad Science Show where we can't even get our doggone Skype to work properly. Uh-oh, here we go again. This is getting exciting. Will we get them both at the same time? Do 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 do. Seriously? Grandpa used to say, if you want something done, you gotta do it yourself. This is terrible for radio, man. I am telling you. Now, let's try this right here. I will call these two. Alright, did you guys pick up? No, they hung up. Alright, I'm going to keep talking until they get it figured out. So, use the every force of nature that's available and alright, let's just say hypothetically the doggone Heron's pump only worked part of the time and somebody had a doggone electric motor hidden behind the colored water in that deal. So what? Who cares? Alright? run those two wires for that hidden motor over to a solar panel, and now you put that thing out in the sun, and when the sun's going, it will continue to circulate. Hook that thing up to a doggone wind turbine so that whenever the wind is blowing, it will continue to circulate. Measure out the time that that doggone thing will run without having to be restarted on its own, without no solar, without no wind, and throw in some battery backups to go on there, so that when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing, it's running off of a battery backup for a small pump that keeps it recirculating up over and over again. So from that point on, if the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing and the battery is completely dead and this thing needs to be maintained, and you walk out there once a day, put a little bit of extra work into it, and you get it restarted again. To me, it's common sense, but I don't know. I got to see if I can get these guys back on here. I don't know whether they're having having issues, man. Rain. Oh, okay. I got a... This is terrible for a radio show, man. Try this again. Skype, you go push on call and Skype will ask you to say, do you want to make this call? No, I just pushed the button for the fun of it. Of course I want to make the call. Fool. I can't get them back in here. They keep hanging up on me. Alright, that's it. I'm done with all that. Okay, so back to the show there. I was trying to read. I can't click on that, Jermaine. Sorry. I don't click on anything in Skype because it ain't safe. I lost my Skype doing that once. Alright. So I'm going to take a music break and see if I can get Thomas and them rounded up in there. And then stay tuned. You're listening to Mad Science, www.shazizradio.com. Jump over there to the superchat.html and, whew, man, that's a whole lot. Okay, I'm just going to throw on this song because it's long.
years of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Everybody, let me put things in perspective. You're listening to the Mad Science Show at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the fun and games and craziness, jump over there to the superchat.html. And yes, Thomas, I did go to Franklin University. It says so on one of my accounts. It might be, I think it was Facebook or something like that. Franklin University. I'm going to get me a big shirt that says F-U. What do you think? Hey, very doggone nice. You're a foul-mouthed heathen. All right, so basically, this is what I want to try to put into perspective. There was a man, his name was Hiram Alexandria. All right, and this was 1st century A.D., inventor, mathematician, and physicist, Hiram, also known as Hiram of Alexandria. I think I just said that, duh. All right, so basically he made this fountain that had a couple of bottles, and whenever the water come down out of one, it would pressurize the water in the other one, and a little air pocket in there. And that air pocket would transfer over to downforce pressure on the next container, which then in turn would force that water up higher than its level and pump it into the container that it initially came out of.
And then it would be the next contestant on The Price is Right.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You forgot to tell people it was a little bit, just a tiny little bit less volume.
All right, well... Okay, so basically what's going on here, one of these anomalies by themselves, all right? People try to say perpetual motion's not possible. I don't even want to get into a discussion on the deal. I just want to say this. Look, all right, with this anomaly right here, water is one of the most powerful substances known to man. Water has the power to literally strip away the land, cut through rock, separate water. You got an implosive... substance, and you got an explosive substance all in one deal. Water will expand some 1600 times its own volume when it's heated into steam. And so,
thank you.
What?
Thank you.
Alright. So, while my brain is still functioning, using water, by the way, there is water in my brain. So,
water on the brain, what?
Yeah, that too. Alright. So, water also has weight. And when water is transferred up high, it has a down force of, depending on, once again, who you ask, 6 to 8 pounds per gallon. I don't even care anymore. Even if it's only 6 pounds, it's still down force. And so, one of these anomalies by themselves, with any of these so-called free energy devices out there, you know, may not do the job. But take all these things in conjunction with one another. Let's say you got a solar heating system that is able to basically boil water into steam. Now, I want to get these several gallons of water, I want to get them pumped up really high up there. Well, steam... Now that it's in the gas form, will go up. It'll rise. It floats. It's neat. You know, it's pressure. It's going to go up there. Then when it gets up to the top, you got this cooling system that's going to cool that steam back down and cause it to flash back into water. They call those condensers. Once the water condenses and fills up the container at the top, now you have a solar lift for water. All right, now that's the sun did that job over there. All right, now when that water's full up over there, now the water's got to do something. It's got a path to ground, so it's going to go down. As the water starts to head down, it's going to go through this pipe, and as it's coming down through this pipe, we're going to put a venturi with a check valve on there so that the water can't go out the top and no pressure can get out the top, but it will also allow the air pressure to be sucked in via vacuum as the water pressure's downforce is pushing it down. Right now, when that water finally makes it to the first container, there's a small volume of water already in this first container, and so there is an air pocket inside there. That as that falling water comes down, it pressurizes that air pocket, which in turn takes that air pocket and forces it over into another container that has partial water in there. That air pressure building up in that second container creates another downforce that will force that water up the tube back up above the level of the water that you started with. Now, at some point, if it stops, then it's not perpetual motion. Alright? But there's videos out there that people have put out that said that they've solved the problem of keeping the container B or A or whichever, the second container, the one that's producing the air pressure that produces the downforce, which forces the water up the deal. When it finally runs dry, then the system stops. Well, they solved that problem by putting a pipe from the bottom of one, from container B to container C, whichever the A's or B's or the C's, I don't care. Either way. Now, the one is, water will always find its level. It stays constant all the time. It still has the same downforce on one side as it does on the opposite. And so, basically, you're still building up pressure as long as that water continues to fall. Now, with the video that I posted in the link, there's questions of whether or not, because the guy used colored water, whether or not he used an electric motor inside there. And I'm saying, I don't care. I hope he did use an electric motor inside there. I hope he cheated it. Alright?
Thank you.
But nonetheless, it doesn't stop the fact that without that electric motor, you were still able to get that water to raise above its own level and dump it back into the same container for a short period of time. So if you put a float valve on the second container, inside the second container, when the second container gets down below a certain point, it will kick on that electric pump that's being charged up by a wind generator and a battery bank. So the electric pump will come on every so often to refill that water and get it circulating back around again. Alright? And so with that said, if the wind ain't blowing outside, you have a solar panel tapped into that as well. So taking one of these anomalies by itself, maybe you're not going to be able to get perpetual motion, but if you take every single thing that Earth has to offer, that nature has provided, all the energy forces around us, then nature hasn't stopped blowing the wind. Nature hasn't stopped producing electricity. Nature hasn't stopped producing heat. Nature hasn't stopped producing water. So, with all those things in conjunction with each other, and knowing that if you don't use it, nature takes it back, you want to tell me perpetual motion isn't possible? Then I'm going to tell you, you didn't pay attention in school. So, are you guys caught up to speed now?
Yeah, but what I'm trying to think about is, duh, you're just explaining in detail exactly what you've been saying for the past 4 or 5 years. I mean, you want to build this great big capacitor, but it's already here. It's already here. It's called Mother Earth. I mean, damn, Shazid. I mean, you're explaining in detail to people what we here on Mad Science have been telling them for years. It's here. You cannot destroy energy. You cannot create energy. It is here. Use it.
Yeah,
how it's not free. No, energy is free. It's the machine that you have to build to use it. So we don't build a giant capacitor that's two states big and try to capture all the energy in one spot. We build 10 trillion little bitty capacitors, put them all over the place. Okay, so somebody puts up a wind turbine and catches a little bit of wind power. Okay, the wind doesn't blow, no problem. His neighbor, 50 miles away, his best friend he went to school with, has a solar panel bigger than he needs. You follow me? Okay, I've got a friend of mine I went to high school with. He lives in the Allegheny Mountains, and he's got a waterfall on his land. So he puts in a generator that generates more electricity than he needs. So he puts it into the grid, and he uses what he needs, and the rest goes to his neighbors. That's what I'm trying to say. That's what you've been saying for years.
Yeah, and I've been trying to get people to understand something. As long as you're dealing with the system or the power company, then you're going to have to pay the bill. That's as simple as that. But if you want to build your own community electric companies, if you got a water way on your property that's able to turn a big hydroelectric generator, then instead of sending it into the power grid, hook a line from your house to your neighbor's house, all your neighbor's house. Make your own power grid, you know.
So then you get nailed for setting up a fire hazard, man.
Well, you know what? The government can, you know, go to Franklin University. All right. So I'm just saying, look, you know.
What happens if it does catch on fire and it burns your neighbor's house down? He wants to sue you for it, or he's going to come over and beat you toothless.
Well, then shoot your neighbor in the foot and tell him how you like me now.
All right, now we live in the United States. Okay, so Thomas is right. We need to understand that 85% of all the lawyers in the known world live in the United States, because this is the most suit happy country in the entire world. You try to help somebody, and you're in trouble.
All right, then look. Don't worry about getting sued by your neighbor. Don't give your neighbor no electricity unless they sign a piece of paper that says under no circumstances that they will ever sue you for anything, that you have not only diplomatic immunity, but you also have any kind of fault immunity or whatever. There's no way in heck that they're getting a red cent out of you or anything from you if their house burns down because they
don't run a line to their house. Don't hook the equipment to it. Make them come and set the line up and hook the equipment up.
Yeah.
And that way, if they didn't do it right, it's their fault.
Yeah.
All right. Hold up a minute. I've had this same experience, all right? I bought these grid-tie inverters. I hooked them to solar panels. And I've read all kinds of positive thoughts or things, whatever, about these grid-tie inverters. And some of them were very positive. Oh, man, I put them on my solar panel, and my electric bill went down, and blah, blah, blah. And somebody else, we're talking blogs here, okay? I don't like that solar panel. That name brand doesn't work. I burnt my house down because of it. This and another. I mean, no. It burnt my house down. Wait a minute. Duh. Do you understand anything about electricity? Oh, wait a minute. Oh, my God. How many did you have? Well, I had 5. And you plugged them all into one line? Yeah. It said they were stackable.
Well, look, man.
Think about this a minute. All right, you're going to pump 10,000 watts of electricity through a piece of wire that's less than 2 millimeters in diameter? What do you think is going to happen? No, you can stack grid-tie inverters, but the more you stack, the bigger the wire you need. Now, it's plug and play, but you got to make sure that the wire you plug it into is big enough to handle it. Duh, shazam, your capacitor.
Listen,
thank you.
Listen, I'm not saying there ain't no cure for stupid.
I love that.
All right?
I love it.
But my point is this, man. I set out to prove once and for all energy's free. I think I've more than done that, proved that energy's free. Now,
4,000 times, actually.
People are going to argue with me, and they're going to say things like, well, you know, you got to buy this, and it ain't free because you got to take this or that or whatever. Or even using your solar panel is going to make the sun colder. I've heard it all. Alright, and I'm like disgusted. And I've been seeing these doggone trends of alternative energy guides out there that are just getting so fed up with being called everything under the sun. You know, filthy stuff, you know. And so, basically, you know, they're ready to throw in the towel. They're ready to throw in their hat and say, the heck with it, you know, the world's messed up. I can't do nothing about it. And so, this is the way it's going to be. But,
you know, I don't know if my scenario matches what you're saying, but I think it does. For example, there was one time, I mean, in my business, construction work, I was doing a remodel on the job, and the city says, okay, these doors are too small because of handicap regulations, blah, 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 blah. We have to change all these doors out. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, there's 38 doors. These things are gorgeous. They're wood grain. They're stained. They're beautiful. We got to take them out and throw them away. So I had my guys take them out carefully. Now I spent extra money to take them out carefully. Okay? So they could be reused. Honest to God, she says, I swear to you, on everything holy to me, I tried for 6 weeks to find somebody that wanted these doors. Okay? Oh, they're beautiful. Oh, no, 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 no. But you can use them in your house. You're building a new house. Put them in it. No, 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 no. They were free. Actually, they were more than free. I would deliver them for free. And no one wanted them. So what did I do? I had to pay more money to load them in a trailer, pay for the gasoline, to haul them to the landfill, pay the man's hours, his time, and energy to take them to the landfill.
Check this out.
And then I had to pay the landfill a fee to dump them. And they run over them with a bulldozer and chew them all up and covered them with dirt. Energy is not free.
This is the kind of world we live in, Raymond.
Get rid of energy if you think about it.
Raymond, this is the kind of world we live in. Rick Wright in the chat room over there at the Shaziz Radio chat room at superchat.html. He says, according to Business Insider, the bottled water industry grossed a total of $11.8 billion on 9.7 billion gallons of water in 2012, making bottled water about $1.22 a gallon nationwide and 300 times the cost of the gallon of the tap water. If we take into account the fact that almost two-thirds of all the bottled water sales are single 16.90 ounces or 50 milliliters bottles, though this cost is much higher, about $7.50 per gallon, according to the American Water Works Association, that almost 2,000 times the cost of a gallon of tap water and twice the cost of a gallon of regular gasoline. Now you see what I'm talking about? They're just three-quarters covered in water and somebody's able to make freaking $11.8 billion off of water and there ain't no such thing as free electricity?
Really? I'm talking about water. I live in Lewisville, Texas. In Texas, every public water system, be it bottled or piped, has to send a sample of its water once a year, every year, to the capital, which is Austin, Texas, okay, to be tested. I mean, Lewisville has come out top of the line. Top of the line. Purity and taste. Contamination. everything, top of the line, every year for the past 18 years. And yet people in Louisville continue to buy bottled water that is nowhere near the quality. Come on, folks. I mean, think about it. Knowledge. Knowledge. You can't beat it.
So, like the folks that are running muck, calling all these alternative energy researchers stupid and all this kind of stuff right there, they're the ones that's going out and buying the bottled water.
Amen.
I'm telling you, man, maybe there ain't no cure for stupid.
I got that. You got that right, man.
So,
it also happens to be one of the most powerful weapons. You can take the most armed person intellectually, and a stupid person can beat them down with ignorance.
Yep, that's true, man. I'm telling you, I've had some conversations with a few individuals. By the time I got done talking to them, my brain hurt, man. It's like,
I've been there, and I've seen you do that. Exactly that, Jesus. You talk. You pay too much attention to stupid people trying to cut you down. And that's what gets you in that download that you get into every once in a while.
Well, apparently it's not just me. Because other it's not just you. Other alternative energy guys are basically getting fed up and basically ready to walk away, man. I ain't done a video on my YouTube for probably about 3 or 4 weeks now. I basically lost my motivation. I'm still doing my research, and I still got things that I could actually film and get a new video up there. But I've been so doggone frustrated by the whole episode, it ain't even remotely funny. And, you know, it's just that when you talk about free energy, alternative energy, green energy, the mainstream media, they said there was a need. All right, the people of the world, they said there was a need. The environmentalists said there was a need. The government said there was a need to save the planet by finding clean, renewable, alternative energy. We've been sitting here shouting it from all four points of the compass and every doggone mountain we can get our feet on to tell everybody we got everything we need. All right, but it's like, you know, you ever watched a movie and you watch this victim getting ready to get attacked by the bad guy, and so you're sitting there and you're shouting, hey, look, right, look behind you, stupid, you know, and no matter what you say, they still get killed.
Yeah, because they didn't listen to you.
Yeah. And it's like they're not, you're not even saying nothing when you're saying it. And it's like aggravating, you know. Guys like Kesha go out there and they tell a heck of a lot of lies and they claim to be the Messiah and do all this kind of stuff and charge people for alternative or free energy devices, which most of the people that paid didn't get nothing to show for their money. He took their money and ran. The guy's on the lam somewhere out there.
Hey, what if you're watching that movie as it's being made? And you're saying, hey, look behind, there's a piece of pipe, grab it, hit the sucker in the head, he's got his back to you. And he turns around and looks at you and says, I can hear you, but that's not in the script.
Well, that's the whole plan.
The whole plan, you're right. Stupid is.
I was going to say, that's like that thing of, man, I'm telling you, man, why didn't you shoot him and get rid of him, man? He could have kept him from shooting me and killing me. And the guy looks up and says, well, man, I'm sorry, I was too busy, and so I didn't notice the bad guy music.
Huh. Yeah. You know the snipers had Hitler in their sights 3 times before the Second World War started, and they were given a red light? 3 times they could have taken the man out. All 3 times the snipers were given a red light. Don't shoot it.
The thing about it is, you know, everybody sits around complaining about how the government is corrupt and does this and that, and I'm sitting there telling them, you got an out, man. You've had an out all along. You can stop paying the doggone government, stop putting up with their shenanigans, or get proactive and actually get in there and replace and repair the government, you know. Or you can just wait for it all to fall apart and then, you know, make the best out of a bad situation at that point. All right? And so, it's not like the people can't do something to fix this stuff. You know? But you got people out there who literally go out there and protest save the trees. They got a wooden stick and a paper sign. All right? That don't make no sense. Jermaine said, Shazuz, what if you take the exhaust off a car and put some pipes in it to boil water and drive a wind turbine, which is generating electricity? Raymond, I don't know how you've been going on your project or whether you've had time to work on it, but we talked about here a while back about taking an internal combustion engine, which, as far as I'm concerned, if there was ever a proof or evidence of over-unity, the internal combustion engine is just that. If you took an internal combustion engine and you started modifying that thing to make it as super efficient, you vaporize the fuel before you put it in, you wouldn't be wasting fuel, you get cleaner emissions and a better burn. You'd still get the heat generated from friction, so the oil would get hot, the block would get hot, and so you'd still have the need to cool the engine back down. So you got a massive amount of heat generated by an internal combustion engine. All right. Well, now you got the exhaust to contend with. The way that the doggone turbo-injected cars work is they got a turbine that is actually turned by the exhaust. That turbine turns fast, and it sucks cold air in from outside, compresses that cold air, which in turn heats the air back up. So then they got to run that heated air through a cooler before they dump it back down into the intake portion to raise the pressure up inside the car again. And so you could do so much with that heat. You could produce a steam engine like Jermaine's talking about down here in the chat room by, you know, boiling the water off of the doggone the block itself and take that steam pressure and move it around. See, all we're doing is moving energy from one place to the next. We're not creating anything. We're not destroying anything. We're just taking energy and we're producing energy by whatever action that we do. You know, like rubbing two pieces of sticks together will start a fire because you got friction and keeps adding the heat to it until it finally catches fire. Well, so with that said, you could take this doggone energy and you can use it over and over and over and over and over again until you're blue in the face and you still have energy. According to their own laws of physics, energy can neither be created nor can it be destroyed. So where does it go? It goes out as far as heat losses or light. It gets expended. It gets moved around. It gets transferred to the atmosphere. That's why if you're standing next to that engine while it's running, that general vicinity right there where you're standing is hot because there's a lot of radiant heat coming off of the doggone thing. We could build a perfect motor that would take every bit of that waste energy and turn it into electricity or, you know, use it for cooling with, you know, basically like a heat pump system works, you know? And so, it ain't that we can't, so you can't get people to understand. You know, look, go ask a mechanic what happens if I take the radiator out of my car and just drive it without it. The mechanic's going to look at you all crooked. He's going to say, what, are you stupid or something? It's going to get so hot, it's going to weld itself to itself and destroy itself. It's going to warp the head, it's going to warp the valves. It's going to destroy that motor. The oil is going to probably even catch on fire. It'll be smoking like a freight train. So you can't take the radiator out of it because you got to get rid of that doggone heat as fast as possible in order to keep that engine cool enough to run. Right now, every single engine out there is running on right on the edge of the danger zone. You know, if you take your radiator out or bust a radiator hose, you maybe got a quarter mile you can go before that engine gets so doggone hot it will destroy itself. And I've seen people literally drive for hours afterwards using only the wind and only the oil to cool that thing down. And once they got to the other side, they wondered why the doggone engine was knocking the beat all heck and smoking like a freight train. Because that engine had one of the systems, one of the anomalies that I like to call, taken away from it. And so it tore itself up. It's like a perfectly precision bearing will allow something to run so smooth that you don't get harmonics built up that actually cause vibration that will literally start shredding those bearings. You can actually throw something off of balance and you can get enough vibration to literally tear that sucker apart. Same thing with your engine in your car. There's a harmonic balancer in there that if that thing gets so much as a dent in it and you run that car, you're going to start noticing a vibration in that car. That engine is going to go ying, 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 until it finally gets to the point where it just rattles itself apart. Screws will be unscrewing themselves and things will be cracking. And if it ain't made precision, then it will tear itself apart. So the internal combustion engine, as far as I'm concerned, is more than proof of overunity. You can get out more than you put in because you didn't put that much energy in there to get that. What you did was you produced enough heat and enough forces from outside that while you were using that particular amount of energy, there was other energy forces as well, such as you driving into the wind is going to cause that engine to have to work harder, which causes you to have to put more fuel to it in order to keep it going, which causes that temperature to raise up yet even more. You got tires that are rubbing on the ground, which are producing friction, which are producing heat. You got brake rotors or brake drums, which are basically rubbing up against each other while they're going down the road. And then the starting and stopping, which is producing heat. You've got the drive shaft, whether it be a front-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive, four-wheel drive, they're continuously turning. It's heating up the grease. It's heating up the bearings. There is friction going on throughout this entire system. And so you're generating way more energy than you're putting in with that gasoline. So what do you guys think?
I think you hit the nail just as square on the head as you could possibly do. I mean, look, what you're just talking about is a heat engine.
Yeah.
All right. Everybody thinks a heat engine runs on heat. It does not. It runs on a difference of temperature. So, what I'm saying is, the most efficient heat engine you can possibly build is one that you have built to where you can get the heat out of it as fast or faster than you could possibly put it in. But, the thing is, what are you going to do with the heat that you take out? That's the whole secret right there. What are you going to do with the heat that you take out? Put it into another heat engine. I'm sorry. Am I stupid?
Yeah, you can turn that heat.
Yes. I don't know what to do with it.
You can pipe it
over somewhere else and use it again.
Yeah.
You can't destroy it.
You could turn that heat into pressure that you could turn into cold. You could use the heat coming off of the engine in order to make the electricity or make the air conditioning for your car. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can be changed.
It can be changed and it can be moved and reused and relocated.
It can be stored, it can be changed. And, man, I don't understand, Raymond. I don't understand why people just don't get it. You know?
I mean, I've been working for several years now on a cold steam turbine. Why? Because I want to take the heat from the air conditioner and turn it into electricity and feed it back into the air conditioner. I mean, come on, folks. It's possible. It is. It's not plausible. It is possible. I've done it.
Well, I'm saying that if industry out there would would seriously want to make things work right, you know, if they really seriously want to make things work to last, and if they really seriously cared about, you know, the economy, the ecology, the environment, whatever, if they really cared about all this stuff that everybody keeps talking about, then they have everything that we have. They have all the knowledge, all the access, all the tools. They got actually more than we got. If anybody wanted to get it done, they could get it done. But it don't sell.
But you used a word that I would like to expand on a little bit, and that the economy. Oh, so rich people who are making money off of selling stuff that doesn't work for a long time, I mean, they're scared to death of something new because it'll ruin the economy. Are you going to deplete jobs? Duh.
Are you kidding? If you open up the floodgates...
My point is, so you're going to make a carburetor that uses gasoline vapor instead of gasoline, is going to drive a car 15 times farther on a single gallon of gasoline. You're going to destroy a job. We can't make these carburetors we're making anymore. Duh! You're creating jobs. Now all of a sudden these people that are working in the factory building the modern day carburetor fuel injection system, whatever, now they need to learn a new trade. So all of a sudden you've got all these teachers, these professors, whatever, trying to teach these people how to build this new carburetor, and that won't take long. So now all of a sudden you've got new jobs to replace the old jobs, and you've got 1,500 times more jobs than you do people that know how to do them. So all these people that are out of work said, oh, woe is me, I don't have a job anymore. Get off your lazy butt and go to school and learn how to build a new carburetor and work in the new factory to build the new carburetor. So economy, ruin the economy? No, you're going to make the economy better. Come on, man. Well, Think about it. When you destroy one job, in order to destroy one job, you create jobs for three more people.
If you open up the gates and allow free thought to get through, then you're going to create more jobs than you've got people for. Because you ain't got as many educated people that can understand the physics of everything needs to be going on, but you still be able to have jobs that don't really take no, you know, physics, like, you know, folding a box, putting a new part in the box, slap a sticker on it, send it out. All right?
Yeah, but I think what Raymond was trying to point out is that the economy is like energy and matter. You can either create nor destroy it.
Yep, there you go.
You can only use it.
Well, thank you, Thomas. That is exactly what I was trying to say.
What it is you got a bunch of lazy, greedy people who want to squeeze every nickel out of other people that they can into their own fat bank account without giving anything back.
Amen.
There was a guy, Joseph Papp, Noble Gas Engine. Don't know if you guys are familiar with the Papp engine. But this engine literally reuses its own fuel over and over and over again. When you turn off a fluorescent light bulb and go over and touch it, how long does it take for that fluorescent light bulb to get cold? Anybody?
Not very long. I lit up a bunch of them using your method.
Yeah,
and,
so...
They weren't even hot when they were lit. Come on.
Yeah, but that plasma inside there is pressurized. And it has heat because it has light. But my point is this. If you really seriously wanted to do it, you could build the equivalents of the PAP engine, which essentially used high voltage to energize the gas into a plasma state, which would cause it to pressurize, which would push a piston. Alright? And so, just by turning the power off, now you release that pressure and the temperature difference, and that doggone piston will go back to where it was to start with. So we could use the same exact fuel over and over and over and over again if we engineered it in the proper fashion in an engine that only required high voltage to cause an expansion and contraction. It heats up, cools down, heats up, cools down, pressurizes and depressurizes, back and forth, back and forth. There's no reason why it can't be done. And that technology, the PAP engine saga seems to have its roots in the 1950s, but it only came into public view in 1968. Strangely enough, there may well be an underlying physics that links elements of the two stories and their profoundly heretical science, pathological skeptics, cold fusion. Anyway, I will post this link inside the chat room, and so you guys can go read that by yourself, but either way, if this doggone technology was one anomaly, and the Stirling engine was another anomaly, and the Huron water fountain or whatever was another one, and so on and so forth, you add all these things in together, and now you got the perfect freaking device. Jermaine said, I have made two-stroke engine with, and I built a bubble carb. What it does is it uses a vacuum that the piston creates to suck air in a pipe and tank of fuel, and bubbles out, and the fuel-rich air then goes to the engine, so runs on the fuel-rich air, and there is no fuel fluid going into the engine. See? Jermaine's still in school, and he's already figuring out a lot of stuff that a lot of people don't even have a clue about. Vaporize the fuel, it's actually more powerful than liquid fuel. You know?
Yes, 100% more.
And when it comes to water, or even fuel for that matter, hydraulic pressure with a positive displacement pump has the power to lift just about anything under the sun. Alright? You know that you can lift a 2-ton car with a 2-ton jack just by cranking it with your hand. Up and down, up and down. You're pumping the deal through a positive displacement pump, is putting pressure underneath that deal and pushing that doggone piston up. It ain't got nowhere to go. They've been using leverage for thousands of years to lift things that 100 men couldn't lift. And so with that said, it ain't about we ain't got the power to do it. It's about we ain't using the right doggone tools in the right doggone configuration to get it done properly to begin with. Instead, we use a brute force magnet spinning around a coil to get electron flow, to produce electricity. And we waste more energy trying to produce electricity in that fashion, and that's where guys like me and other researchers come in, is to find better ways to use that electricity without having to work so hard at producing all that energy. Why produce thousands of volts if it only takes 9 volts to run a doggone alarm clock, man? I don't know. Maybe I'm just... One of my friends got really mad at me because he said, oh, you just try to oversimplify things. Things just can't be that simple. Actually, I was explaining to him... I was explaining to him that water and electricity have something in common. They work hand in hand. They both pressurize. Both of them have a current flow. Both of them use check valves, gate valves, resistors, whatever you want. You know, all of these things. If you understand plumbing, then you understand electricity. That's as simple as that. And so with that said, if there's a Venturi effect that can be acquired via water, then there's also a Venturi effect that can be acquired through electricity, so that you, when you're pressurizing something, you can pull energy in from the atmosphere around it and amplify that pressure, which is voltage. Am I wrong?
No way are you wrong. No way.
Well, see, if you ever messed around with a Van de Graaff generator or Wimshurst or any of these static electricity devices, and you pay attention right before that doggone spark jumps across that gap, you can feel an ion wind, which tells me that something is going on right before that that is literally creating a back pressure, a vacuum that is drawing in energy from around it until that finally causes that energy to leap across that gap and, you know, to the end of your fingertip and shock the crud out of you. So, we ain't trying to defy any of the known laws of physics, even though I personally believe the laws of physics are not written in stone. They are merely theories of how things work because we don't understand exactly the terminology or actually what is actually occurring. Nobody has ever got a picture of the electron, but we still go by the electron theory. But even with the electron theory, even without the electron theory, then all of it still works the same. Water works like electricity. Electricity works like water. And amazingly enough, if you separate hydrogen and oxygen from each other, when that separation occurs and they recombine, they actually produce what? An electrical charge. Imagine that. When water's falling through the atmosphere, it builds up an electrical charge. Think about it. Where the heck do you think lightning comes from? There's ice crystals up there because it's colder. The farther you get away from the ground, it gets cold up there. And so while it's cold up there, any moisture in the air basically changes into ice crystals. Otherwise, snow wouldn't be falling from the air during the wintertime. But as those ice crystals are rubbing up against each other, bouncing into each other, all the hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and whatever else is up there is bouncing off of each other, it's producing a static charge. When that static charge gets high enough to literally ionize the air in between the Earth and the ground, the negative electron charge of the Earth will literally send a lightning bolt right straight up there and pow, balance everything out for a second or two.
And then it starts all over again.
Yep. Energy always takes the shortest path to ground. And so with that said, man, look, if you know that energy is going to take the shortest, easiest path, that is nature balancing itself out. You know where it wants to go. And in the process, you put your windmill in between it. And so the wind is going this way. And you pick up the doggone wind and you turn it into mechanical force, which then in turn turns your crude magnet system around a coil of wire, which generates electricity and gives you your light bulb in your house.
You said the secret word, the crude magnet system.
Yeah.
Crude, very crude.
We are still in the Stone Age of energy. Now,
I like that. Because if you are correct, we are in the Stone Age of understanding energy.
Well, if people really seriously want to get this thing together, then it's going to have to take people networking. Now, Thomas is working on some deals where he's able to print some things out. There's parts. So between our little three area right here, we actually got things in the works. Maybe not moving as fast as we want them to move, but we're networking and we're getting things done. But that's not going to cover the entire world. And we can lead by example and show you guys things and teach you guys things, but if you never take that and run with it, then you aren't going to get anywhere. If you want to support us by going out there and telling people, hey, check out Shazoo's Radio. You know, they got a good idea, they're working on things, and at the very least, you're going to come away with a smile on your face. You heard something in school, and you think it's the gospel, and they said something counterproductive. Oh, whoa, man, that old Shazia said something about maybe the earth is flat, maybe it's round. He don't care what shape it is, just as long as we get... Don't say dodecahedron. I know it's coming. All I'm saying...
Maybe it's dodecahedron.
Yeah, it's all in how you deliver it. Dodecahedron. Sounds ominous, don't it? All right.
Shaped like a potato.
Yeah, the earth is shaped like a tater. All right, so look.
No, I got a sneaky feeling that there's people out there that think we're crazy.
Well.
And I've got a sneaky feeling there are some of those people out there that are listening to us that think we're not crazy, and because they got some really good ideas, they just sitting there listening, and when the radio show ends, they're thinking about, well, you know, I could do that. Yes, I could. Hey, you people out there that think you can, do it. Don't just think you can, go do it. You've got some great ideas.
And
there are people out there with some brilliant ideas. And there's people out there with dumb ones too, but it doesn't matter. What matters is, as long as you think you can, and you don't even try, then you never will. You've got some great ideas out there, folks.
Yep. And,
put action. Go out of your garage. Grab some tools. Try. That's the whole secret, is try. If you fail, you didn't fail. You did not fail. You learned something.
And if you take and you leave away from any of our podcasts any kind of idea that it sparks an idea, then we've done our job. So if you want to support Shaziz Radio, not asking you for any donations. All I'm asking you is for just a second or two of your time. Either put a message in the chat room, or go out to Facebook, throw one on there, or throw a link to the channel. Tell the people what we're talking about. We're just trying to get some common sense and ideas flowing. When the common sense and ideas are flowing, then that's how things get done. But it's not going to get done by three guys that are networked together. We're going to help ourselves out. We're going to learn a lot. We're probably going to help a lot of people in the process. But we can't fix the world by ourselves. You need to network out there with yourselves and your neighbors. And, you know, use common sense. Energy is free, folks. I think I've proven that beyond a shadow of a doubt. Now I'm working on a gizmo that I hope that will basically put it in perspective so that everybody out there can do this themselves. They understand that it is possible. But even without me, even without the gizmo, you got water for a hydroelectrics. You got the sun for solar. You got the wind for wind power. You got all kinds of thermal vents out there. You got natural gas. You've got so many different things going on in nature. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it, because the world is a buffet of free energy. We are floating in a sea of free energy. And if you want to make this run, that inefficient turkey that you call your house and in the electric grid, then you're going to have to make a few changes, and help us to help you make a few changes by showing you different ideas and different ways to look at things other than the standard point of view that you get from school, that you can't question the teacher, because if you question the teacher, then you're mouthing off and you're going to go to the principal's office. All right? We need people that's going to think outside the box, who's going to question everything that we're saying, going to question everything, because when those questions are flowing and the lively debates are going on and the brain power is cooking, somebody's going to stumble on to the holy grail of free energy. And if they're trying to sell it to you, don't buy it. It ain't free. If Keshi's out there making millions of dollars selling you bogus products and getting rich off of it, but he's still on the lam and you can't get a straight answer, then you got the equivalents of NASA. Keep paying them and don't get what you paid for, period.
You know what? I don't know if I ought to say this. My people are going to think I'm stupid, but I was expelled from school in my senior year in public school 3 times because I absolutely refuse to agree with my history teacher. And guess what? It took 3 times of expelling me, trying to force me to believe what they were teaching me. For me finally to come up with a scenario that they could understand that I was right and they were wrong. And I was just a teenager. They were in their 30s, 40s, and even 50s. The principal of the school agreed with expelling me from school because I refused to accept what they were trying to teach me. And what they were trying to teach me was wrong.
Yep.
It was wrong. And eventually, I suffered through. And eventually, I convinced them that I was right, and they confessed that I was right. But guess what? Even today, they still teach the same lie.
Okay, so basically, folks, today's going to be a shorter show than normal because I got to go out to a church function and show these folks what I've been trying to show you guys and gals all the time, and give them some ideas and spark off some more ideas and help their cause out at the same time. So basically, I'm going to an alternative energy convention, and old Shaziz's crazy ideas will be going to help some other folks out there. So with that said,
you just hurt my feelings.
Hurt your feelings? Why?
You didn't invite me.
Oh, well, you're in Texas, brother.
I love you, man, but don't you guys remember me? I would love to go with you to that, but now I can't because I can't get there that fast.
Don't you guys remember I told you about like a month or two back that this was coming up?
Hey, I'm 72 years old. I've slept since then, okay? I forgot.
Well, you remind me to remind you to remind Thomas to remind us both that we got something to do next time.
The next time, Thomas, the next time he says something like that's coming up, then you stay on top of me, and you and I go on with it.
All right.
That sounds great.
I guess we just need some member berries.
Some what?
Some member berries.
Where do you get those?
I don't know. We need to find that out, man. You know, you remember whenever the movie E.T. came out? Mm-hmm, I remember. Yeah, member berries.
Yeah, well, we found our round to it. Now we can get busy.
Hey, Thomas and I were talking about that yesterday. We're going to make some of them.
Cool. All right, well, so for all the folks that showed up in the chat room and posted links, Rick and Jermaine and Steven and all the comments out there, thank you. You've been listening to the Mad Science Show. And if you guys get an opportunity to talk to Jermaine, you guys got to talk to this guy. This kid's good. He's the one that did the solenoid engine. And I got all the faith in the world that he's going to come across some really decent stuff in the future with his research. And so with that said, folks, if you like these podcasts, please pass them around. That's how you can help support Shaziz Radio, just by showing up. There's a microphone here. If you want to come on the radio show and talk to us about this kind of stuff, we'd love to have you here. Add us on Skype, user Shaziz on Skype, and you guys want to give out your Skype? If not, then we can just figure it out as we go. So anyway, anything left, guys? No? Yeah? Any last words?
Not a whole lot. I think we covered everything, except for one. Well, no, not except. You did cover it. I've said over and over again, the most powerful thing on this earth, the most powerful thing on this whole earth is water.
Yep. And so, I'm studying hydrodynamics and pressurization and static electricity, and I'm going to combine a lot of this different stuff to be the power source the initial power source of my plasma reactor that will indeed do exactly what I said it will. And so with that said, folks, peace and love. Thank you for listening to the Mad Science Show. And I got another event that I have to attend because I made a promise that I'd show up. So peace and love. Everybody take care. You've been listening to Mad Science.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.